This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. Matthew Rubin and the other analysts at the UK-based research firm FutureSource Consulting spend much of their time looking at the electronics industry, both the consumer and business sides. Rubin is a senior analyst with the firm and puts his attention to the Pro AV and digital signage markets, and his point of view is behind FutureSource reports that look at what's happening in the marketplace and also forecasts what's expected to happen in the coming months and years. We had a very good chat talking about where digital signage and Pro AV are at, a year into the pandemic and a year into the brakes being slammed on a lot of planned work. We get into many things, including the state of LED and LCD, and we also talk broadly about how businesses are doing and when a turnaround is expected. Matthew, thank you for joining me. Can you explain what FutureSource is all about and your methodology to some degree? Like, how do you guys do your research?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, it's best to explain I'm a senior analyst at FutureSource covering the professional displays categories. So that's looking at obviously LED projection, a lot of work on LCD and then obviously interactive now. And FutureSource as a whole, we track the whole, you know, the whole technological scene. I work on the B2B side, so very much within displays, but we have a team that focuses on the education sector and a lot of work on professional audio as well. But we have a B2C side, you know, so really focusing on, you know, the whole range of consumer electronics, but also, you know, entertainment and how people are engaging with that across the spectrum. And I think it's all kind of really intertwined. So it gives us this really great opportunity to see the whole spectrum across the B2C and the B2B landscape. But yeah, so we in terms of methodology, it depends on the product category. But on the display side is a really good example of one we've really perfected and spent a lot of time developing over about two decades, particularly on our projection tracking service. And that's really a vendor-led service where we get direct data feeds from, you know, about 90% plus of the spectrum of all the vendors, and they give us their volumes and down to a module level, and we correlate that, really kind of dig into some deep analysis around it, and provide really detailed data back to, you know, everyone in the ecosystem, not just the vendors, but all throughout the supply chain. So that can be used as tracking, very down into specific segmentation levels, but also trend analysis, really kind of what's driving the market. We obviously do a lot of forecasting, so looking out to about 5 years. So we've got to understand what's happening in the industry, where it's going, and you achieve that not just by speaking to the vendors, but, you know, right through the ecosystem, including end users. We really need to understand who is using the technology and what they're using it for, and what we think they're going to use it for in the future as well, which is really vital. So that's one of our, you know, one of our best developed services, and we have that across our displays categories. But we also do a lot of consulting work as well. So a lot of our clients come to us and ask for us to, you know, really find out something very particular and an answer to that. And that utilizes a lot of our existing data. But we also have, you know, great connections across the technology, particularly the B2B side, technology landscape. So we're able to get so much knowledge together from our network, from our data, and, you know, our own knowledge from working in the industry for for a couple of decades now. So we're able to, you know, offer a very broad spectrum of services there.
It must take quite a bit of work to win the trust of the different manufacturers, because you're, you know, as you described, asking them to send a data feed of sales volumes and everything else. So you must have some pretty significant NDAs or other kinds of agreements.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a testament really to the way that Future Sources has been around for quite a while, and the kind of level of trust and accuracy we've managed to maintain, like I said before, over a couple of decades. The projector service I think is our oldest, at about 20 years, and it's, you know, so deeply ingrained in so many of our partners now that it's really a key part of their processes. And actually, we're trying to replicate that now with an LED tracking service, which is, you know, so much in demand. And I know a topic you spend a lot of time looking at as well. But it's a different world, and it's speaking to a completely different ecosystem, in especially in China. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing again from having to build that trust and from the ground up there. And it's a slow process, and absolutely it's something you can't rush.
Yeah, it must be particularly hard with Chinese companies just because of the way they operate and the government funding in behind a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a, generally speaking, that they're not used to that kind of methodology with in terms of sharing that level of data with a third party, effectively. Some have experience with it, especially those that already have operations or have, you know, purchased foreign businesses that use that kind of methodology, and so have kind of shared that around their businesses and up to the parent company. Right. That helps certainly a lot. But generally speaking, yeah, it's certainly more difficult than internationally outside of China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a company like Layard that bought Planar, they would have been kind of exposed to how all this works and be perhaps a little more comfortable with it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the big LED vendors from China have, like you said, made a few purchases recently, and I think they're still in that process of sharing those kind of methodologies and that kind of data throughout the company. But it's happening quite quickly. I think they are becoming much more comfortable with, you know, that level of sharing and confidence, particularly in a brand like Future Source, where we have that relationship elsewhere, but it needs to be developed with them.
How much of a problem, if it's a problem at all, are all of the faux research companies coming out of somewhere in India, Pune, India primarily, who clog up the news releases every day with forecasts for digital signage that appear to be pretty much nonsensical? Do you compete with them, or is that stuff just kind of out there and it grabs the flotsam?
It's hard to say, isn't it? I think so much of, you know, the research industry is built around trust and brands as in research brands that you're comfortable with and you're aware of, and those are the ones you really end up paying a lot of attention to. I think it's something that's similar. You'll get across the internet. There's a mass of information out there, and if you already know your stuff, you'll go straight to certain sources. And I mean, you're a great example. You will filter out the kind of information that you're getting and what you're willing to share with your readers and your listeners. And I think it's the same across the spectrum. I think of course you're going to get quite a lot of information out there from any research house that can churn out content, but you pay attention to maybe a much smaller percentage of that.
Mm-hmm. That might actually know the industry.
Yeah, that certainly helps, isn't it?
What a concept. Yeah. So in terms of the industry, one of the reports that you guys put out in the last 3-4 months, maybe more recent than that even, was mega trends in the context of digital signage and Pro AV. What's happening out there?
I think, first of all, you've got to really recap what's happened in 2020 and you've got to recognize the difficulties. I think live events in particular, and digital signage, you know, without these kind of live events driving the market, you have this real dip in demand, and it's put a lot of businesses in a very difficult position. And similarly with digital signage, there's just, why will end users or advertising companies, why will you invest in these kind of displays that really have been growing up until 2020, these eye-catching LED or high brightness projection, really impressive displays that you see in big cities around the world. Why are you going to invest in that when you simply don't have the eyeballs on the screen on the high street? You're not going to invest in that. So 2020 as a whole, mostly speaking outside of China and outside of APAC, has been a massive struggle, an undoubted struggle. And you don't have the basic drivers behind creating some real investment there, undoubtedly. But saying that, there have actually been some really interesting and cool positive stories out there. An area that we track very closely, slightly left field of kind of what we're talking about, is interactive displays. Mm-hmm. And we actually have another tracking service on that here at FutureSource. But there's been a huge amount of demand for that kind of technology, particularly in the education vertical, where, you know, there's been such a drive to invest in you know, the need to help children learn remotely in a hybrid fashion, more interactively. So many of them have laptops in schools, and you know, there's a huge drive behind investing in that. And in some cases, it's a realization how far behind certain countries are in progressing in the technology side. A great example of that is actually in Germany, and there's a lot of investment behind Digital Pact there. And there's a great hope that will speed things up very quickly. But as a general concept, while most of the display industry has been in decline, that's actually been growing very strongly in China and outside of China. So that's a real positive story. And even within projection, an area that, you know, is probably on a bit of a long-term decline slowly, and really struggled during 2020, but even within there are pockets like ultra mobile projectors, and that's partly driven obviously by consumers sitting at home and wanting that cinema experience, but also people in, you know, wanting mobile office spaces, really looking ahead, how are people going to use the office space, what kind of displays they need in them, how much space you need between employees. It's really a question that's going to be very difficult to answer until we know a lot more about the virus and the antiviruses and how that looks going forward. But mobile projectors are a cheap and easy way to have that kind of flexibility there. But you know, that's us thinking more about what has happened and moving forwards. I think a really interesting theme that we're trying to build upon is this idea behind merged displays. And by that, we don't mean literally merging displays into one device, but situations, applications where you want to utilize LED, LCD, and projection. I think a really great example of that is within the retail vertical, where, I mean, again, another area that's really struggled during 2020 without people on the high street, particularly in Europe and the US. But again, there's going to be this huge need to encourage shoppers back out onto the high street. And that is around this idea of maybe every store, instead of having hundreds, thousands of stores to cover the broadest area, you're moving to an idea where almost every store is a flagship store. Mm-hmm. That means fewer stores, admittedly. And that obviously is kind of necessity due to the high growth of online shopping anyways. It's pretty much an unsustainable business plan in the long term. But when you start thinking about every store becomes this flagship store, you have a great need to really integrate displays and audio as well within that in some cases, but really invest in creating this experiential shopping experience. So it's not just a basic transaction, but it's an opportunity to really build on the brand and brand awareness and really draw people back out of their homes, which is something that, you know, is really going to be an area that people, well, retailers need to focus on, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly there's been all kinds of forecasts and prognostications that the way that consumer shop has been changed forever. They've developed new habits like buy online, pick up in store, buy online, do curbside pickup, all those sorts of things. But we're still at a time when there's lots of talk about that, as opposed to we're still in the pandemic. So we don't really know yet how consumers are going to behave after all this is done. Will they just go back to how they did things before, or are the forecasts right that this is how people are going to shop now? They want to just roll up and have somebody bring what they bought out to their car and hand it over.
Yeah, what's really interesting here is you're right. There is a consensus that these things are here to stay. That online shopping is going to dominate to a much greater extent than it was before. In all honesty, it's hard to say. That is obviously based on the fact that was an existing trend moving pretty much in one direction. So it's pretty easy enough to assume that is going to therefore ingrain more heavily in the way that consumers act. But another way, you know, really of the way that we look at this and try and understand where things are heading is that you can pretty much put most countries on a chart in terms of how far online shopping penetration had already reached before this. Obviously, 2020 is a bit of a misnomer, but how far that had already reached in terms of multi-channel, click and collect, all of these things you mentioned, the kind of modern way of shopping. And actually, the UK is, funny enough, one of the most advanced in that area, and so it's pretty easy to assume that other countries, as they are clearly going on that similar trajectory, you can almost plot where they are more likely to end up. There are some slight variances around that, of course, in terms of literally just geography, what's possible in more dense cities and countries compared to a place like the US, where you have these very high pockets of populations and then vast spread out areas. But even then, you get this whole area of drones flying products around, which isn't possible in much of the UK. But really, I think you can pretty much plot a lot of countries along this line. So you can see the future, or at least the near future for a great many of them. And certainly here in the UK, it was already very heavily ingrained, online shopping, as I said, click and collect, multi-channel, and the way that people interact with retailers is far beyond that idea of just seeing an advert maybe on TV and just going in store. There are a great many touch points, and I think part of that and the way that the thinking is evolving is that stores are a hugely important part of that, but are not so simple in terms of just going there to buy something. It's something, an area, almost part of a marketing budget, where there's a great opportunity to invest in the brand, in helping people remember that brand and what it stands for, and technology plays a huge role in building that.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
How closely do B2B and B2C trends kind of correlate. So in other words, if we're seeing a big spike with purchases of 4K LCD TVs, does that trend seem to track as well on the B2B side for commercial displays?
I think it inevitably does, but for not completely, but different reasons. And that really ends up just being that the manufacturers put a lot of investment behind the latest and greatest, be that 4K. And that's, you know, even that is hard to argue has been pulled by literally by consumers. It's mostly been pushed by manufacturers. But because so much investment goes into the production line, it makes so much sense to move everything over, move everything in that was B2B, maybe where you would only need 1080p. And realistically, that is all you'd ever need. It still makes financial sense to move almost all production over, if not all, to 4K. So it does have an absolutely direct effect on it. Similarly with projection, you get some similar trends and desires around laser technology and much higher brightness that consumers are demanding. And that's actually really helped on the B2B side and the wider applications you can use there. And actually that flows backwards and forwards, particularly on the projection side. But in terms of display panels, I think it's really just almost, I don't want to say forced on B2B, but it just makes efficient sense to follow the B2C side.
Yeah, I was curious about that. If product development is by and large driven by the B2C side just because of volume and everything else. So I have heard, I haven't had this ever confirmed, but heard that much of the genesis of smart commercial displays, the ones with embedded system on chips, had to do with just having a whole bunch of available SoC processors, and you know, what are we going to do with them? Well, let's make commercial displays smart displays.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one in particular, but you know, I suppose it's one that's very particular to LCD. If you look at LED and what's going on there, that's another one to closely watch in terms of what is going really to drive it. You have the likes of Samsung who are very consumer, or they do a huge amount of business on the B2B side, but they're hugely focused on consumers as well, and they see a huge future for micro LED in the living room. And the investment that they're pouring in there will absolutely flow and help the B2B side and what they're going to do there and what they're capable of, because there's still big leaps and bounds to be made in manufacturing processes. So that's a much earlier stage, but possibly a much clearer example of how the B2B and B2C sides interact. And it all comes down to investment, doesn't it? And who's drawing that investment? Is it the masses of consumers? And will they demand enough of that product versus, you know, commercial entities?
Where are we in terms of the shift from LCD to LED? You had companies talking about this being something that was going to happen over 5 years or so, that LCD video walls would go away, replaced by LED video walls. But I keep hearing the price delta is still pretty substantial between LED and LCD.
Yeah, you are right. A theme we like to talk about a lot is moving towards price parity. But in a literal sense, it doesn't really mean that they are going to reach the exact same price, or at least not in the near term. It's more that in terms of a consideration for a business, it's within the realms of possibility to consider LED instead of LCD in many examples. Whereas before, the price of LED was way too much and way out there. And there are some other considerations as well around durability, which have generally been solved now. But the price delta was huge before. Whereas now we are actually entering phases where LED can be chosen above LCD, and it makes business sense. And sometimes that's to do with the longevity of the device. It can be to do with the flexibility that LED offers that LCD might not be able to. But absolutely, we're certainly not at the point where they are, and I just don't expect it in the next year or two, for sure, where one is exactly comparable in terms of price to the other. But again, it also depends on what you're doing with it. As I kind of mentioned there, if you really want a custom display, LED is almost your only choice if it's a very bespoke setting. You could go down the route of projectors, but that has its own difficulties. And equally, as you scale up to very large displays, it's about the willingness to accept a bezel, maybe if you're building up a big LCD display, which you wouldn't have on LED, and you don't have the same exponential cost as you go up in size there. So, you know, there's huge differences. And even then, moving on from there, when you have to think about geographically, it's simply a much cheaper product in China because there's just so much of the supply chain there and a lot of government support behind manufacturing. So it's an even easier choice in China, which is really where we're seeing a huge uptake in LED, often at the expense of LCD.
Mm-hmm. Is the sense in the industry, in the display industry, that LED will largely shift, apart from outdoor stuff, from the conventional manufacturing, the SMD, surface-mounted devices, to micro-LED or perhaps mini-LED, but more likely micro-LED? Is that where it's going?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that you know, this is where the money is flowing, is into micro-LED. And really, that's what everyone wants, and it's a desire to at least to make it compete more effectively with LCD in terms of, you know, the density and then just image quality, which is really impressive now. But there's this idea behind mass transfer technology, and that's really where we're expecting to see a bigger flip in terms of pricing. Of LED, and when it really becomes feasible as on a mass scale as a comparable to LCD, and that is across consumer as well as B2B, but there are still a few of these leaps that kind of need to be made, and realistically not expected in the next 2 or 3 years. You reach out to vendors and you hear sometimes quite wildly different expectations in terms of timelines, in terms of what's going on there. So I think there are still some technological leaps that need to be made in terms of processes and manufacturing. But the end goal is the same, really. It's almost matching LCD's curve and maturity, but it's a bit more premature at that stage.
So I gather the big challenges still are getting the manufacturing times down using techniques like mass transferring all the LED dye, but directly tied to that is raising the quality controls level so that the number of flaws when you mass transfer those LED dye are absolutely minimized. Otherwise, what they call the yield becomes a problem, right?
Yeah, and I think the yield, and you know, a lot of issues around just generally durability around LED was a theme and an issue over the last few years, but very much less so now.
Okay.
From what we understand, it's a moving scale, isn't it? It's much better than it was, but it's still obviously room to go. But a lot of that investment is really trying to build up this next generation of plants and how they manufacture LED displays. And I think that yields have been progressively improving at such a rate that it is, you know, not as much of a priority as it perhaps was in the last few years.
Right. The other megatrend that was identified by Future Source well, one of them anyways, had to do with AV over IP. What does that all encompass?
Well, you know, it's not my personal field that I spend a huge amount of time on. We have a team that's literally dedicated to AV over IP and the benefits that brings in a range of spectrums. But it's still quite a field that's in early development, I suppose. In some cases, it's where it's a field of educating end users and the around the benefits of using AV over IP in a whole range of fields and applications. And I think, well, again, it's not an area that I focus on too much, but it's certainly an area of a lot of growth opportunity. But one of the barriers is just understanding the technology and understanding it as a leap forward almost in how you kind of transfer that data.
Mm-hmm. We, of course, can't really envision when things get back to normal because of vaccine rates and variants and everything else. But I've spoken with a number of companies that are saying, you know, we're starting to see things turn. We're expecting by Q2 or maybe Q3, business will get back to what we would perceive to be normal. At a macro level, understanding that everything is in flux, does FutureSource have kind of a point of view as to when the digital signage and AV industry will sort of start to come back to normal?
Again, people like to term what is the new normal as well, and we're all hoping it goes back to at least something that we understand and resembles previous experiences. And like I say, it's easy to say things at a macro level, but I think even again, it goes back to this idea of geographically, there are hugely different experiences of what's happened with COVID in Asia and China compared to the US and the UK is another example that is hit very hard. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is actually we've just finished our Q4 2020 data submissions and processing there. And there are some bright spots, and we're already seeing relatively strong LCD market in particular. And as I said before, a lot of that is propped up by interactive, and it's not digital signage, shall we say. That's certainly mm-hmm. still really struggling, and it's all tied around this idea of when can people go out in groups and do the things that they used to do. And generally speaking, yeah, we think around the middle of the year, we should start seeing a lot more activity around that. But again, all of that ties back to every country is able to get the vaccine out at different rates. In the UK, it looks like we're pretty much ahead of the curve, which makes a nice change. So it's easy to say around here, the second half of the year, we would expect a very much improved market for digital signage and the whole AV market. And that also encompasses, you know, events that we expect and hope to be able to go ahead. But again, take a step back, it's unlikely to be much travel, international travel in particular, yes. Until, you know, that's really hard to predict, much later, we think, in 2021, with a lot of red flagged countries, is kind of how the UK government has termed it. But countries that we don't expect that travel will be allowed until they have reached a certain level of vaccination. And that's going to be true of so many places. And without travel, without tourism, without that kind of investment, so much hinges on that as well. Even with live events as well, how can you expect artists to go from one place to another, or sports mm-hmm. teams? And there are it's all really very much interconnected. So at a very high macro level, absolutely, middle of the year, we would start to see some real positivity there. But in terms of really hitting recovery levels, we're probably talking around Q4, Q4 at the earliest to hit, you know, some of the real peaks. And that's, of course, true. We are expecting a notable bounce back in demand. We do think there's a lot of pent up demand, a lot of businesses that have kept devices going for longer to avoid that kind of initial investment a refresh in technology. And that's totally understandable. Why would you invest at this point, a very high risk stage for many businesses? But we expect a big flow of investment within certain verticals. Obviously, there are some verticals that are probably going to struggle for the whole of 2021, and it won't be really until 2022 that you see a real rebound there. But there are a lot of enterprises and a lot of signage areas where we'd expect to see a fair bounce back, particularly in the second half year.
All right, Matthew, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate it.
No, anytime. It's been a real pleasure, and it's always great to talk about these high-level themes that are going on, and we have so many detailed conversations with so many partners. It's good to talk about what does that all mean and kind of where is it going, and a time like this, it's all very unpredictable and you know, makes it more engaging.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.